Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And we're going to be adding something very special to the aspect of mind power because we're going to be dealing with the magical aspect of working with art. Now, art includes music, dancing, painting. There's so many different modalities of expression. And my guest today, whose name is Mary Rockwood Lane, she and her associate, Michael Samuels, a physician, put together this book, Healing with the Arts. And it actually is a 12-week program that allows you, if you're daring enough to explore and have fun in the process, find out how you can empower yourself in a way you would never have dreamed. This also can be applied to a community that you're living in. What if you're having a lot of challenges with kids, gangs, whatever? Art is a phenomenal, phenomenal tool that is a harmonious tool to use, and we're going to find out more about this. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here.
Now, Mary, you are a woman that has been very much involved with the arts for a good portion of your life. Yes. You are the co-founder and co-director emeritus of Shands Arts in Medicine at the University of Florida in Gainesville, where the sun is shining. Here, we've got a drip special, gray skies. We in the Seattle area have to live up to our reputation. But anyway, in Florida, where the sun shines and the weather's gorgeous when everybody else is freezing, you're teaching creativity and spirituality in healthcare. This is marvelous.
Exactly.
This is absolutely marvelous. You've also done a lot of research on it. Michael Samuels, he's also a co-founder and director of arts as a healing force. He teaches at San Francisco State University's Institute of Holistic Studies. And he's written 22 books. How in the world did the two of you, being from the opposite sides of the United States, ever bump coffee cups and get together and decide you're going to put this together?
Well, it was many years ago. We met at a behavioral health conference in Hilton Head, and I was doing a presentation on the arts and medicine program, and he was doing a presentation on arts as a healing force. He had started an organization in California that was networking with artists and healers all over that part of the country, bringing them together. And then I was creating a program at the Shands Hospital, which was bringing community artists into the hospital to work at the bedside with patients and family.
Ooh.
And without me realizing it, this small group in Gainesville sort of thought we had thought of this all ourselves, but it wasn't true because at that time there was things happening. It was one of those ideas that the time had come.
Mm-hmm.
The time had come for it to manifest in the world. So we partnered, and we've been writing ever since. This is our sixth book that we're writing together.
All right. Now, Mary, you yourself went through a very personal experience of being healed by art. You suffered from depression and whatever else
Yes.
it was. Would you share your story with my audience? Because I think that's important. You're not coming from
important.
A position of being all intellectual here. This was a very personal happening for you.
It was very personal. And I had already been working as a nurse practitioner. I had already been working in a professional life. And what happened was I ended up becoming separated from my husband. I had two small children, and I became very emotionally and physically sick at the time of the separation. And nothing prepared me for the pain and the despair that I was experiencing at that time in my life. And despite the fact that I was trying therapies and different kinds of interventions, nothing was really helping me get through this period. And it wasn't until a friend of mine who was an artist happened to invite me to her studio and said, Mary, you know, you have a spirit that's you. It's hard to contain. Why don't you just come over and just put some paint to a canvas and see if that'll help you? And I went over and I started to paint. I started taking canvases out. I had never painted before. It was this extraordinary experience. I loved the color. I loved the canvas. And I ended up starting to paint these distorted images of women, and women that reflected my state of being, which was the pain, the suffering, the despair, that time, my rage that I was feeling. It was like the only place I could constructively express my true feelings. Mm-hmm. And it was so phenomenal. It was such a phenomenal tool for me to be able to use that as I painted for several weeks, I ended up getting through this experience, and I started painting these images of myself, and I looked at myself, and I realized I was healing.
Fabulous. Now, this is something that is progressive. This is something that when you're working with color, or sometimes people like to use materials, you know, different items, I think that is so significant. And I had an interview that was relating to a Japanese artist who had survived the atom bomb in Hiroshima. Right. She was a little girl when it happened. And her art, I'll never forget when I first saw it, I thought, this is to be the ugliest, most hideous stuff I have ever seen in my life. That was my first response. This was before mm-hmm. I even knew her story. And later, I looked at this with an entirely different eye because I found out what her story was. And art is such a powerful medium, And there's so many ways of expressing it. Now, with Michael, the two of you got together. Because you were on opposite sides of the United States, how was it that you decided to come together and share your mutual levels of knowledge?
Well, at that time, I was just beginning to do research at the University of Florida. I had become a doctoral student in the College of Nursing, and I had a small grant with the College of Medicine, and I was going to do research on the Shands Arts and Medicine program. And he, too, was a researcher and a physician, and he had a tremendous amount of knowledge as well. So what I started to do is I started collecting my data, and we started writing together, basically sharing the information and the data and the research. We shared our literature reviews. We really started really looking at this and what was happening in medical schools and academic settings, because he was a researcher in his training. So we started collaborating by just us working together in sharing our research. And then we began, I was doing my dissertation and I was doing my data collection, and we started actually writing together, and we wrote our first book, which was Creative Healing. It was how artists can work in hospitals and what that looks like. Then we did the second book was Spirit Body Healing, which was what was the experience that people had when they used art as a way of healing. And in the last 20 years, through our collaboration and partnership, we feel this book, which is a 12-week program to heal yourself in the community, is our best book because it's easy to follow guide. It's based on a tremendous expertise of us working in different parts of the world. And we have put our heads together once again to sort of make this the best guide that could possibly be out there for people who are interested in using art either to heal themselves, to maybe even work with someone in their family that's going through a very painful experience themselves, or also how to work in creating a community, healing community settings. And as you know, with things that are happening in the world, when one person has pain, there's a community of people that share that pain.
Very true. But being able to move through that pain, to take the gift of whatever the experience is and to move forward with it, is one of the wonderful blessings that comes with this healing with the arts. You have a very profound story in the beginning, your preface, in fact, about a little girl named Maria. Would you share that with my audience? Because it is a powerful story.
Well, that was a beautiful story. Maria was a child with leukemia, and she had been in the hospital for several weeks. And the dancer and the artist would work with her when she was in the hospital. And she was dancing, and it was a very powerful experience for her and her family. But when she went home, they thought she had recovered. And one day when she went back to the cancer center, she looked at her mother and she said, "Mommy, the bad cells are back." And at that time, her mother was very, very upset, and it was her last hospitalization. And what happened was during that last hospitalization was so remarkable. And this was the story that really enlightened me to understand the depth of power of art and healing. Because the dancer came in just a few days before Maria was going to pass away. And the dancer came in, "Is Maria up for dancing?" And even though she had been going in and out of a coma, she woke up and said, "Yes, yes." So in that moment, the mother was watching her, and the dancer and the little girl were dancing together in the room. And she looked at her mother, and she did a little curtsy, and she said, "Mommy, don't worry about me. I'm going to be dancing with the angels." Mm-hmm. And it was in that moment, it was as if her spirit was illuminated for everyone to see. And that's when I realized the power of the arts. It really heals us to the level of our spirit because it allows our spirit to be illuminated. And that
Absolutely.
Story illustrates that beautifully.
And that's why I wanted you to share it, because this child was a teacher in her own way. And she
Exactly.
gave a gift to everybody that was there, including her family who were going through this grieving process. Now, you have a 12-week program here, and we're not going to be able to go through all 12 weeks, obviously, with our time frame, but what I found interesting is that in the very beginning of the book, you say it generally takes people 3 months to commit time to empowering themselves, and this is what I think is so significant about working with art. It is being able to make it okay that you're not confined. We need to be able to dip back into that part of ourselves that colored outside the lines when we were children and mixed colors together or did something goofy, like maybe put a button on somebody that should have had a pair of pants on instead. I mean, it's being able to be okay without restriction, and realize that this is a part of your essence. You can call it a soul essence, your energy essence, but this is a part of you that's coming to life, and if it's something that's relating to pain or to suffering, you're going to be able to release it. You're going to be able to let it be what it is and let it have its own life for the moment and then release it. I think that is something that is so powerful. Music can do this, just like we were talking about with the dance, with little Maria. There is this commitment, though, that does have to be part of it. And there are so many yeah. ways of doing it. You have, apparently, in this art project and in your book, Healing with the Arts, it's part of it, that you've got to think and work on what you call a final medicine art project throughout the 12-week process. Now,
right.
why would you start out with the end in mind when this is a journey of exploration?
Well, in the journey of exploration, we hope that everyone will find something deeply meaningful in their life that they want to work on, something that they have an intention of healing. And as you go through the 12 weeks, you're exploring different mediums. You're writing in a journal. You are doing an easy step-by-step process of beginning to make art every single, you know, each week.
Mm-hmm.
And the project is something that comes from your inspiration, that stems from this exploration that you will do something that you can feel that's profoundly healing for yourself by making something significant. It could be as simple as writing if you find that you love to write poetry, really focusing on poetry as this project, or dancing, or even building a garden for someone who's passed away. What I have found was, in the commitment over a couple of weeks, there's an opportunity to deepen this experience of creativity and really make it part of your life in a more meaningful way. Many people who have engaged in this program have done projects that literally have changed their lives, really has made a difference, where they have done work with their family that has healed childhood wounds or healed relationships with their parents where they've never had the time to before, or they've built a garden for someone in their life that commits suicide, and the time that it took to build this garden and find inside the art and the making of the garden the forgiveness, the reflection, the healing that goes along with the entire experience of that. So that's why the project is something that I would say you call your very own healing art project.
Now, you can work with a group, and you go into the book on how this group can be brought together, but it's very important, I think, that people know that if they wanted to, they could do this themselves.
Exactly.
And you need to make it okay to give yourself the time and space to do this. And I think
that's
for so
essential.
Many people, when especially there are so many issues we're dealing with, you know, maybe somebody's lost their job, maybe they've lost a loved one, there's a loss of some kind, and they're trying to work their way through it, and they just feel like they're sinking in a peanut butter quicksand that just has no hope. And you just go through this, and this is a marvelous way of being able to pull up and out of yourself that liberated piece of you that is not a prisoner at all of circumstances. It's a very free part of you, and allow it to breathe. And I don't think we often give ourselves that. You have a delightful story in here about Ina Dagman, and
oh, yeah.
She was a student at the Institute of Holistic Health. Now, this is a woman, from the way you describe her in the book, she is just naturally built to be a dancer. She's tall, she's got a gorgeous figure, she's got everything that would automatically, as soon as you look at her, you'd say, ah, yes, this is a dancer. Tell us her story.
Well, she was a student who was in a graduate program. She had spent all her time in academia. She was living in a very competitive world of trying to do what she needed to do to make a living, get the education, get the jobs. She was very involved in her life. Well, what happened to her when she started, the pressure was on, she started getting physically sick, emotionally sick, and literally it was like she was breaking down. And she kept trying harder and harder to make everything work. And it was as if her body was just getting sicker. And this happens to many of us, and we don't realize that our body is a wisdom, has tremendous wisdom. And the body is really reaching out to us, trying to get our attention. But we live in these worlds where we get so much information outside of ourselves. Well, what she began to realize is that she took this course. She was with Michael Samuels, and he invited her to think about what it is she could do creatively to heal her life. And what she felt she had never, ever had time for, but she always dreamed of doing, was to be a dancer. And at that time in her life, her mother was going through a divorce from her father. So there was this tremendous family crisis, where her mother was very depressed and she was very sad and the family was in this tremendous amount of pain. So what she ended up doing is she ended up, for the first time, she started to dance. And she took her mother and had her mother sit, and she got the community, which was the class, and she did the most beautiful healing dance for her mother, healing her mother and dedicating her dance to her mother's healing. And it was so overwhelmingly beautiful that it was so riveting, not only to the other people in the room, to her mother, but also to herself. And she realized not only was she healing her mother, but she was actually healing her own body. And her body started to respond, and she started to feel her body in incredibly new ways. So she kept right on dancing and ended up healing herself from all her physical illnesses that she was having. And she testifies and says, "This is what healed me. I became the person I was meant to be. I had no idea."
Mm-hmm.
And when I came in right relationship with myself and right align with myself, my whole life started to change. My work changed. I started dancing every day. I decided the graduate program wasn't for me. I decided I wanted to be a dancer who worked with other people who had issues of healing. So she's gone on to be an incredible dancer. She also does community workshops. And it was really a powerful realization for her. Sometimes when we do these projects, we discover who we really are, who we are really, like our body is calling us to back to ourselves. Who am I really? And it's as if the body says to you through the creative process, this is who you are. Be
and
with
I think,
me, express me.
Yeah, I think that's such a gift. So many times we put ourselves in boxes. I know I have.
Mm-hmm.
And we think this is what we're supposed to do because either we've been indoctrinated by society, our family, there's structure, and we need structure. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with structure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the joys of adulthood should be realizing that you can be in joy. You can be in that creative component and enjoy a sense of liberation, regardless of what circumstances of responsibility you may have. And let's face it, we're all going to have that. But it's the art, the music, the dancing, meditation. This brings a harmonic into the life that can take the most mundane of existences and paint it in a whole new color, and you view things differently. You, instead of looking at what you don't have, you look at what you do have and realize that you have the right of choice. And I think that a lot of what's going on in the world today is that waking up process. It's terrifying. And using the arts is a very gentle way, a wonderful way. It can be fun. And some of them may say,
exactly.
Oh, my goodness, we got to take this stuff seriously. I'm going to say, well, true, in some situations, that's true. But why not let the light of creativity flood your environment so that you are inspired and you realize that there may be more answers available to you than you otherwise would consider? Now, you talk in your book about having what you call the basic art healing supply. Now, we're going to come from the painting or sculpting or whatever approach. And you just say, save magazines, whatever, postcards, pictures of
mm-hmm.
something that
it,
really...
It's so many, it make it an easy way to start.
Mm-hmm.
And Healing with the Arts is a wonderful book in that it's a very simple, easy-to-follow guide that allows you to explore making different projects, making different art pieces that really give you the confidence and flow. They build on each other because there is magic in the power of making art. And there is this experience as you engage in the process that many people who've enjoyed this book and this process, it is exactly what you said. It goes to a place of being in joy and in liberation. And in that experience, there's this energy and flow that just emerges that allows the process to unfold and become easy.
Mm-hmm. Also, this creates chemical change in the body. And I love it when in medicine you have a word that's 5 miles long, like psychoneuroimmunology. Yes, that's something. If you're really stressed, try saying that fast. 5 times, and your stress will increase by 1,000-fold. But there is a reality of a change in the physiology and in the chemistry. Exactly.
When you are engaged in being in touch with the creative side of yourself. And what I like about this is that there's no right way. I think it's maddening whenever you have someone who will say, it's my way or the highway. People will go in for classes, and they may end up encountering someone that has a very strict modality. We'll learn from them what they have to teach, if that's of interest to you. But remember, as an artist, no matter what aspect you choose to put yourself into, you will at some point have the right and the opportunity to create what you want. You're not locked in by somebody else's dictums. And that is what makes this so magical.
That's what makes it so powerful, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, with Samantha, she is just someone that came alive. She was a sophomore in college, and Lord knows college is extremely stressful, especially when most students don't even know what they want to do. They're going to college because that's what they're supposed to do, and you ask them, what are you going to do when you grow up? They say, I haven't a clue. I've got to finish these classes first, then I'll think about it. And, you know, that's more real than not. Tell us about Samantha.
Samantha was a young woman who was a student at San Francisco State, and she was very interested in art and healing. And what she discovered in the class was she had discovered a long lost and hidden memory in her childhood, where she had had a sexual abuse experience that was very, very painful for her. And it came up in one of the classes. And what ended up happening is she came from a place of where she felt like at that time in her life she was a victim, but at this time in her life she recreated her experience of that, of what happened to her as a child. And when she started making art as a way of healing that past experience, it was like the peeling of an onion that allowed her to get to the essential nature and strength of her own soul. She emerged as a woman who was empowered, who used her creativity to express herself. She able to use her energy and her creative energy to rebuild her idea of who she was. And she became committed and empowered by this work. And what she ended up doing is she ended up becoming a leader of other students in the school. She created a whole workshop for women using art as a way of healing to empower them not only on maybe sexuality, but also eating disorders and body image. It was a phenomenal momentum that she created in bringing women together in using art as a way of healing. And she has just grown in so many ways, and she is such an incredibly beautiful, empowered woman who is really a voice for other women to encourage them to be able to express themselves with their creativity.
Well, I think it's just phenomenal. Now, you bring up a man, and I know we've got just a little bit of time left here, a man by the name of Alex Gray, and you talk about his 21 life-size paintings, The Sacred Mirrors. Tell us his story.
Alex Gray is an artist in New York City who is a visionary healing artist. Now, he is an artist who makes art with the intention of the art itself to be healing. When you go see Alex's work, and he has a beautiful website, and he's building an installation in New York, when you actually go and stand in front of his work, it's a powerful experience. Sometimes just being in looking at art, experiencing art, you know, looking at paintings, they can be in and of themselves messages themselves and energy itself that can be healing. And what Alex does, he makes this art with the intention of healing the person who's viewing it. And that is a gift and a beautiful intention of this artist's work. And his work is phenomenal and has reached so many people.
You go into, and again, we don't have a lot of time to be able to chat about so many areas in the book, and one is guided through this 12-week process. It is just
wonderful. Here we are in the colder months of the year. The days are darker, and the further north you live, the more dark hours you have. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to engage in something that would allow you to emerge through this dark period with a new understanding of yourself and a feeling of harmony and balance, and going into the new year with this kind of an awareness?
Exactly.
This would be a phenomenal, phenomenal exercise, if you will. But I hate to use the word exercise. It sounds like you've got to do 250 push-ups. I really think it's far better when you say it is a freeing process that allows you to enter into a new year with the awareness that you as a person are significant and you can liberate yourself from whatever you might be impeding you on one level or another. This isn't about beating yourself up. It is about being able to recognize the essence of who you really are and doing it in a way that can bring you joy. You can share it with other people. So this book, Healing with the Arts, is a very powerful publication. And Mary, I'm so glad you're with me. For those of you listening, go to healingwiththearts.com. That's the website, same title as the book. It's a 12-week program that can heal you and your community. Mary Rockwood Lane has been my guest. Michael Samuels, MD, is the associate author with this. The two of them have put together a wonderful, wonderful workbook that I recommend highly. Why not explore it? You're entering into this cycle of winter. Sometimes creates a lot of depression and a feeling of suffocation almost for some people, unless you can live in Florida the way Mary does. And the sun is going to shine, not like the gray skies of Seattle that we experience this time of the year. Wherever you are, though, why not liberate yourself? Healing with the Arts. Mary Rockwood Lane, thank you for being my guest today. It's been a delight having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. More good things to share. We're going to be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Just give me a buzz. All I need is your first name or initial, and we'll take it from there. Tomorrow, my guest is going to be Miss Jan. We're going to be talking about malignant, how cancer becomes us. Yes, this is a researcher, a woman who's been touched by the big C, and we're going to find out what her research has brought together, bringing us sort of up to date with an understanding of the multiple personalities that this has. Also, coming up next week, magical fashionista Tess Whitehurst is going to be my guest. Oh, this is going to be so much fun. And then we're going to be talking about the Fall of Alphas. Dana Arty What's happening out there in the world? What does alpha mean to you? Dominant personality? Well, we are seeing some big changes. Safe Beyond Belief, Margaret Johnston, a researcher in belief systems that have evolved through the centuries. On message, Zach Friend, a man that has been involved in certain political processes. It has to do with advertising, the PR of the world, and how it can be manipulated. We need to be aware. So we are in charge of our own space. And then Sacred Journey of the Heart, Rana Prince is going to be my guest. We've got some wonderful, wonderful people that have terrific stuff to share with you. So won't you join me and tell your friends and be here at my broadcasting table so you can hear more good things. I have a wonderful, I'll call it sort of a spooky story, but what do I want to say? A serendipitous type of a story. It'll take us back to 1829, but before I do that, I wanted to share with you how certain words are just supposedly not in. Yes. Words have a way, depending on cycles and the time that they become popular. It's like the word fantastic. Well, there's a lot of fun stories, and one day I'll tell you one about that that my husband told me many years ago, and I've never forgotten it because it was a very profound story. But anyway, the word fantastic has evolved differently. Well, the word friend. Now, the word friend as a verb, when did that really come about? Do you know it came about in the 1400s? In the Oxford English Dictionary, the word friend means to make friends or to help someone out. Now, in 1698, the word friend was used differently. This is how it would read in a sentence. Reports came that the king would friend Lauderdale. Now, if you can friend someone, you can unfriend one, right? And in 1659, there was a book published by a man by the name of Thomas Fuller. It was called The Appeal of Injured Innocent. And this was a sentence in his publication. I hope, sir, that we're not mutually unfriended by this difference which hath happened betwixt us. The word friend. Very, very different connotations and usage, but it evolves. And dude, oh my goodness. Remember the Ninja Turtles? Everything was dude in that. I love that movie. I happened to see part of it the other day. I thought whoever put it together, it really was cleverly done. I really like it. Oh, I know. My husband says I'm more of a five-year-old than what I am, but that's okay. That part of me, that child part of me, just loves those things. Dude, hey, dude, how many times do you hear that said today? Well, actually, it came about, that word started to get used in the 1880s. But at the time it was used, a dude was, well, I think another word would have been a fop. Someone that's very particular about clothes, looks, and mannerisms, who is very exaggerated. You know what I mean. And it was an exaggerated person of the upper class, especially in Britain. And the dude here in America ended up changing because it was applied to people that moved from the East Coast to the West Coast that were clueless about having to live in the world of reality on the West Coast. It was total pioneer environment. So the dude ended up being applied to dude ranches where the sophisticated city dwellers could pretend that they were going to be cowboys or cowgirls or be out in the wild, wild west, you know. City slickers, that's a movie. Dudes, that's what they were. Well, by the end of the century, by the end of the 20th century, what dude meant was someone that was pretty cool. Isn't it amazing how words can change their meaning through the years? It's a fascinating thing. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, we're going to travel back to the 1800s. In fact, a specific date of October the 16th, 1829. We are going to be putting ourselves on a schooner. They're beautiful, beautiful ships. The schooner was named the Mermaid. It sailed away from Australia and ended up being a significant story of the unique, unusual, and unpleasant in shipping history. Now, 4 days after the Mermaid left Australia, weather changed. This can happen when you're at sea. You can have squalls come in seemingly in a blink of an eye. The vessel was just beaten hard by this raging squall, and it entered a narrow Torres Straits. There was a huge wave that lifted the Mermaid up and slammed it down on a reef. It was just smashed. The waters were just raging. You can just see that. This is a huge storm. The crew, they were thrown into the water. 22 people started swimming towards a jagged rock that was quite a distance away. And for 3 days, they managed to make it to the rock. For 3 days, they hung on to that rock until there was another ship called the Swiftsure that journeyed into the Straits and rescued them. Now, 5 days later, the Swiftsure was caught in an unexpected current, and it was bashed, totally destroyed, against a huge batch of rocks. Again, everybody on the ship had to go swimming again. They headed for a sandy beach, and everybody made it. 8 hours after they landed on the beach and they built up some signal fires, there was a ship called the Governor Reddy that picked everyone up. 3 hours after they were on the ship, the combined crew and passengers, all three of these ships, the Mermaid, the Swiftsure, and the Governor Reddy, they had to jump ship because a fire started up in the cargo and area and just explosive. There were a few lifeboats on the Governor Reddy. They were packed with people, floated away, and they were floating away due to the currents away from the regular shipping lanes. But this is what happened next. There was the Comet. It was a cutter, came by, took everyone aboard, and the crew, they were superstitious anyway. This was ship number 4. They were really believing like they had been jinxed. 7 days later, a storm came up, snapped the cutter's mast, tattered the sails, ripped the rails, and wrecked the rudder. The crew grabbed the only seaworthy longboat and left their unwelcome guests aboard the sinking vessel in shark-infested waters. The next day, another ship, the Jupiter, came to the rescue. Now, what's so amazing about all of this is that not one life was lost in the series of shipwrecks, and one of Jupiter's passengers was an elderly woman heading for Australia to search for her missing son. This last point is astonishing. Her missing son was one of the original crewmen on the very first ship, the Mermaid. They were reunited. I think I'd put a call into the customer service department saying, couldn't you make other arrangements? If you want to get two people together, can't you do it in a better way? Shipwrecked. Fascinating story. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to share a recipe with you quickly. I love spicy food. I don't know about you. And with Thanksgiving coming up this month, we're all going to be involved with entertaining or fixing something special for the holiday. And I just love the holidays. I really do. I love being able to try new recipes. But I came across this recipe that is Mexican style, and I love spicy Mexican food. And I thought I would share it with you because this is something you could fix. It's very economical to prepare. And more than that, you can adjust and try to add or subtract some ingredients. But I'm going to give you the basic recipe because it is so good. This would really be almost like a full meal for someone if they wanted to just have it by itself. Or you could serve it with a nice salad or certain meat that you would like. Pork, this would go well with. Now, this is a Mexican chorizo and salsa stuffing. Yes. Now, chorizo, if you've never used it, it's just sausage. It's made of pork. It's flavored with garlic, chili powder, and all kinds of spices. And it also has, you know, it's just good. And it's very flavorful. And this is what you're going to need to do. And you can use, if you want for convenience, you can make your own, what I would say, bread cubes from dried bread if you want. Or you can use a cornbread stuffing mix. And cornbread really goes well with this. So I'm going to go with that venue. You're going to need about a half a pound of chorizo. And if you don't like chorizo, use whatever sausage you like. But this is supposed to be a little spicy. And you want to remove the casings off of your half a pound of chorizo. You're going to need 6 cups of cornbread stuffing mix, or you can use old cornbread yourself, whatever you want to do. You're going to need a cup of chopped black olives, a cup of chopped celery, 1 cup fresh or canned whole kernel corn, and you want to drain it, 1/2 cup of green chili salsa, 1 cup of spicy tomato juice, 3/4 cup of melted butter or margarine. Now, if you want to kick up the heat a little bit, instead of using a cup of the spicy tomato juice, you can get a cup of the chopped tomatoes that are in a juice, and you could put that in, and it's going to create a different consistency, but it is really going to be good. And then you're going to need about 3/4 cup of butter. If you don't want to use butter, you could use olive oil if you liked, and if you wanted to, you could use coconut oil, whatever it is that's your preference. You know, these oils can be used interchangeably, but butter has a particular flavor that really goes nicely with this. So it's up to you as to what you want to use. Now, your oven needs to be preheated to 350 degrees. You're going to need a 2.5 to 3-quart casserole dish, and you want to lightly grease it. I like to use coconut oil. Believe it or not, I have found that is just so wonderful. Foods come out of the dishes just beautifully. Now, you'll take a medium-sized skillet. You're going to put it over medium heat. You add your sausage and cook. And you want to break up the meat with a fork until it's nice and brown and no pink remains. And you want to remove the sausage from the pan. And I usually like to have a plate set up with paper towels on it. And I just put the meat right into that, and immediately the paper towels soak up all the extra fat. And in a big bowl, you're going to put your sausage with all of the other ingredients. Your cornbread, excepting you want to keep out the tomato juice and butter. After you've combined everything well, then you add that. Mix it in. Put it in the prepared dish, cover it, and bake it for 30 to 40 minutes. Now, if you want it crispy on the top, you will uncover the dish and bake it for additional 10 minutes. And if you're a cheese person like me, I would say adding some sharp cheddar cheese on the very top is wonderful. Or if you have a spicy hot cheese. I told you I like things spicy. You could do that too. This is an easy recipe, and you can substitute any kind of a spicy sausage that you like. And if you don't like spicy sausage, then, you know, take the ingredients out that have the spice and put something else in it. But this is tasty, it is good, and it is so nice on the table. And it really could be, you know, a full meal for someone along with a salad. Depends on how much meat you wanted. And if you wanted extra meat in it, add extra meat. You could even add onions if you wanted to. Don't be afraid of a recipe. Fool around with it. Have fun with it. Cooking is supposed to be a pleasure. And I know every once in a while I surprised my husband. One day I'll have to tell you about a story that he says it was one of his worst beef barley soup experiences he's ever had. I'll have to share that with you one day. This is Donna Sebo, and I want to share a particular story with you, but it doesn't look like I'm going to have enough time to do it. Well, maybe I will. Maybe I will. This is about a kitten named Luke. Actually, Luke was not a kitten. He was a few years old, and Luke's mistress, well, she got ill. She couldn't take care of him anymore, and he ended up being put into a shelter, and he wanted so badly. He had been so loved by this woman that to find himself in a shelter, trying to find somebody just for a new home, people that worked there were just heartbroken. Luke just would look and look and look, and then he'd go over and curl up in a corner and like, well, big sigh, nobody wants me. I haven't found my person yet. Well, there was a woman by the name of Cassie, and she was scrolling through her Facebook stuff when she saw a picture that a friend had posted on the Facebook page. And she said, oh, my goodness, this is the most gorgeous cat I've ever seen. And she said, I'll take him. He was up for adoption. Well, there was a bit of a challenge because Cassie lived in Montana, and it was more than 1,200 miles away from where Luke was located. He was in Mesa, Arizona. Well, you have to find a way to get him to his new home. And you know what? I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to share the rest of this story with you tomorrow. I'm sorry. You'll have to find out more about Luke Cassie and a remarkable journey. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are so special, and I'm so delighted you've been able to join me. But I strongly encourage you to be aware that sometimes to find out about the greatness within yourself requires being open to new experiences. Don't be afraid to explore art. Don't be afraid to explore life. You know, you came in here with something special to give, and I just would be delighted if you find out about it and let me know so we can share it with others. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are on this fabulous planet. Talk to you mañana. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.